Towards the late 80s, early 90s, you changed tack completely. You started getting more involved in training jumpers. What was the reason behind that?
I'll tell you, I was doing the entries for the Curragh one day, and I sort of said to myself, this is not working. Like, I mean, here I am with all these horses, but all I'm entering is in handicaps. I have no chance of getting anywhere, or getting up there. And at the time, I had a couple of reasonable clients. Nowadays, like they wouldn't, but I had a couple of people who could spend maybe 50 or 60,000. So I decided to start buying, I decided we're going to switch and go for jumpers. At the time, you could buy the three-year-olds off the flat because they weren't going to Australia, they weren't going to Dubai, they weren't, you know, they were being sold. So you could go to the sales and buy those three-year-olds off the flat. And like, Nomadic, now he was third in the tribe. He was quite a good horse. He won the Morgiana. He was just shy of being a top class hurdler, but he was the top priced 3 year old that year. He was by Ken Mayer. He came out of Favs, and he cost 80 grand, I think. And he was the top priced 3 year old that year at that sale. And we were just able to do that, so we were able to buy those horses. So we were able to, now the point-to-point scene wasn't as gone as the way it is now. So we were able to buy those horses, and we were able to get good jumping horses for reasonable, well, I suppose it wasn't that reasonable, but we were able to get them for the money, you know. So that's how that it turned around that way.
You were sick of basically competing with trying to take on and beat the Vincent O'Briens, the Bulgers, the Wells.
Yeah, like, I was after moving a whole lot of horses into John Ox, and the Arabs were building up bigger and bigger here, and it just, and Vincent was what he was, you know, and it just seemed the right thing to do. It worked anyway.
Was there frustration there though as well? Like, that obviously made you, I want to be the top.
Well, I wanted to be, yeah. You know, like, I wanted to be champion trainer. I wanted to be champion trainer, and I knew I wasn't going to be champion trainer on the flat. So I said, right, okay, come on, here goes. We go this, we threw our hat at this, and we tried very hard. That wasn't easy, you know. There's hard work. There's a lot of hard work. And anyone that knows, if you're training, like, training's not easy. I suppose I'm kind of lucky in one respect. I don't worry too much, you know. I'm able to put things out of my head, you know. I'm able to sort of relax for a while. But it can get you down if you're, you know, because every time you go into the yard, every day, you'll be guaranteed there's some little thing wrong. It might be only a little thing, or sometimes it's a big thing, but there's always something that you think shouldn't happen or should happen, or, you know, this horse is a little bit off, or he's off his feet, or he's, you know, or he's got a bruise in his foot, or just when you think you're going somewhere. So there's always something to put you down. So you just have to be able to sort of balance yourself out and keep going, you know.
Do you find that comes in waves? You get a good run, a bad run.
Oh, sure. Like, I mean, yeah. You're, isn't it? That's what happens with everybody, I think. You really feel that your ducks are drowned. Like, it gets to that stage that nothing seems to go right, you know. Like, I mean, that there's no question about that happens.
Has there ever been days that you said, right, well, I'm going to do something else, I can't do this anymore? After those big disappointments, or horses not being right for a while, or good horses getting injured, and do you ever get disillusioned with it?
Or do you change anything? Do you panic and change anything as well?
I don't think I ever, Kevin, I don't think I ever got to the stage and said, no, I'm going to give this up. I don't think that ever happened to me. Like, I have been, I remember coming back from Cheltenham. We were Tiananmen Square was after running in the bumper, and
Mantellato
beat him. And Gillian was driving the car, it was a hired car, and we went up the road. We were beaten. He beat us 10 lengths, and we were 20 lengths clear of the third, right? And we were going up the motorway, and I was going, and I drew, I hit the windscreen with my fist and shattered the windscreen. Could you believe it? In the middle of the match and the freeze coming in, we had to go on to that. Anyway, that was it. But and I'll never forget her saying to me, she says, but sure, she said, so look what he said, wouldn't he be a lovely winner without your man? I said, that's when I hated, I think, that's when. Yeah, look, you come home from the races sometimes in very bad form. Oh, my God. You really feel, I don't know what this is about at all, you know. It does get you down like that, but you have to just sort of balance yourself out, and it's not easy. I can fully understand how fellas can go out of the mind at it, you know. It isn't easy. I was telling someone today a story about Nina. When Nina was with me, Nina, we used to come in at lunchtime, and Nina would be going, oh, what are we going to do with this? What are we going to do with that? And I'd say, Nina, will you forget about them horses there for an hour or two? We'll talk about something else. Because, you know, you'd want to get them out of your head, you know. I'm sure you're the same yourself, Fran, when you're riding.
Got to switch off at some point.
Oh, God, yeah. If you're, I don't know anybody, whether no matter the best of them, I'd say, had to do that. And it must. I know the likes of some of the brilliant trainers we have now, they must be able to, they must go half scatty if they're not able to switch off, you know.
And do you find in the modern age so much information, no meat, you haven't had a winner for 3 months, 99 days, everyone knows if you're going bad. Do you know, in maybe before that you could gloss it over a little bit, but it's for any trainer, it's visible.
To be honest with you, Fran, I never noticed that. And I never look, I don't even know in the paper where you find that information. So I don't know. It never bothered me. I'd know myself. I wouldn't have to be looking at it in the paper. I'd know myself that I'd be feeling it. But the information doesn't bother me as such. But what really amazes me is that you could be having a flying time, and you'd meet someone at the races or someone, and they'd say to you, you're not doing so bad. And you were thinking to yourself, you're flying, you know, and you went to, you're not doing so bad. And then for the same thing had happened in the reverse, where you'd be coming along and you'd be having a bad time, and you says, God, you're going well, aren't you? You know, and I, you know that. But I'm sure it was the same as being a rider, friend. Like, I mean, it's like being a chef. Mm. You're as good as your last meal. Mm. Like, you're after riding a winner, and isn't he great? And he's a brilliant rider, and this, that, and the other. And the next thing is, next week you get beaten a short head. Oh, that clown, he wouldn't ride Catty Barry. And, you know, it's
gone,
the same.
Bottle gone,
and we're in the same bottle gone. Yeah, well, it's the same training them.
Yeah.
You know, like, after a while, oh, sure, he's doing this, and he's doing that, and he's... He shouldn't be doing what he was and whatever, you know.
Did you ever start doubting yourself off a bad run?
Ah, just sometimes you would. Like I remember going into Christmas, one of the years, and we needed one to get to 100 for the year, and thinking that we were going to have, over the Christmas, we were going to have a raker run, and at the end of the week, we won a beginner's chase in the north on Stephen's Day. And everything else either pulled up or stopped or whatever, you know. It just went bang. And I think we hadn't a winner then for about 3 or 4 months. It was an awful long time. And nothing went right. Nothing went right. Now, maybe it wasn't that long. But then all of a sudden it comes back. And you should be pulling your hair out. But sure, that's the way it is.
And there's... Going back to one of the questions Fran asked, did you ever panic and start changing things through frustration? How you train, how you feed them. Did you ever do that when you were going through that particular bad spell?
Well, I'm very lucky with the staff I have. I have Paul Cullen, who's been in the yard with me since the beginning, practically.
Really?
I have another fella called Damien McGillick, who's been in the yard for the last, I don't know, 20 years as well. And then I have Emma as well, who's... You know Emma, I'm sure. Emma Connolly. Emma Connolly. They're three fantastic people. Like, they really are. Like, Paul just lives in the yard. He never goes to the races. He just lives in the yard. Lives with the horses. lives with them. He knows everything. He knows everything that's going on. So he, you know, you'd run something past him, and he, you know, he'd throw it back. And Damien is the same. Les, we call him. Les is the same. You'd run something past him, and he, you know, they'd settle you down and keep you going. And Emma's the same. Like, I mean, Emma's an absolute star. She's a fabulous worker, and an absolute star. But those people, and there's a few others around as well, not just them now, there's a few others, but them, those three have been with me for an awful long time and know me inside out, and I know them probably pretty well as well. But they would keep you sort of on a level keel, but you do need someone like that as well, I think.
So if you were thinking about half panicking, they'd say, well, no, just
yeah,
go back into the house.
Paul would be a bit like that now.
Well, you need somebody like that, don't you?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Actually, look at it. It's not all smooth anyway.
John Lear, the 5-year-old, is getting a very weary horse. And look at the charge. Mendes Mancino and Hill Society. It's going to be a blanket finish here. The strength of McCoy. Here comes Richard Dunwoody, Hill Society. On the nod between John Lear and Hill Society.
Speaking of frustration, particularly at Cheltenham, Tiananmen Square, that time we were talking about it, back in 1982 in a triumph, you're only beaten ahead, Joe Byrne, you got Hill Society then, champ leave, 20 minute four to finish.
I never forget that. We stayed with Martin Pipe for a night there last week, and we were talking about that. And Martin actually said to me, Dunwoody rode mine that day, and Martin came over to me when they were waiting on the result, and he said, I think you won. But as it happened, Richard said to me when he came in, no, and he said, I think I'm beat. He said, I was in front after and I was in front before, but he said, I think I'm beat on the nod. I think I'm done. So that was in my mind. But I hadn't had a winner, and it was going on so long, and every time it had come around to Cheltenham, everyone was going, the press were on about it, and it was all over the place. And I would get you down, you would get a bit fed up for now, listening to the same thing all over again. And here it was, just looked like as if this could be it. So anyway, the next thing called the result, and he didn't win. And I never forget it. I just walked straight out of the winner's enclosure, the number two, and straight out the gate. And I sat in the front of the car, and I spent a half an hour talking to one of the car park attendants, talking about parking cars. Till they get out of your head, you know. And that was hard to take. And it was after a few more. Charlie rode Heist. And I had great admiration for Charlie Swan as a jockey. And still think he's one of the best jump jockeys that ever rode for me. Like, he was always a bit like Mick Cannan. He was always in the right place and the right time and whatever. But he rode Heist in the bumper the following year. And Paul beat him on one of Homer Scott's. He went up the inside, rhythm section. And Charlie came in, and Charlie was after riding my fellow work, and he said to me, I won't win. He says, I'll be run saddle before they're finished, he says. And he actually, they got away from him coming down the hill, and he couldn't win. I'll never forget, he came in, I should have won Nolan. His owner, I came over with the video. He says, I have the video. He says, do you want to see it? No, I said, I never want to see it again. But that was again, another one gone, you know.
Coming down below the distance down Montelado from Tiananmen Square, Mannery and Zany Man, but it's going to be a 1-2 for Ireland. Ireland are going to win their second race at the festival in the shape of Montelado up towards the line, and it's Montelado who completes his own hat-trick. It's the second winner for Ireland as he takes the first running of the bumper with Richard Dunwoody from the hot favourite Tiananmen Square.
Tiananmen Square, how good was he? Because he was very, very fragile, wasn't he?
Well, he was a very good horse. He was a very, very good horse. He was. I'll tell you a very good story now. And your dad comes into the reckoning at this one. Tiananmen Square was belonging to Paul Shanahan, John Magner, and myself. I owned half of them. And he was after winning his bumper in...
Leopardstown,
yeah. Was it Leopardstown?
Did you beat Marcelli? One of Mick O'Toole's?
No, right. He beat Marcelli. That's the next race that's coming up. Where did he win his bumper? Did he win his bumper in Nace, maybe? He won his bumper in Nace. That's right. He won his bumper, 4-year-old bumper in Nace. And he came on to... he came on to run in the winner's bumper in Ferias. And Mako had Marcelli, your dad was working for Mako at the time. And I sort of thought our lad was fairly good. He was after doing a piece of work as a 3-year-old in Dundalk racetrack when it was a grass track with a couple of others. And Graham Lee actually rode him in the piece of work. And Graham was light at the time when he was here. And I'd say he came home, he was only a 3-year-old. He came home, I'd say, half a furlong in front of everything else. And there were some very good horses in that piece of work. But anyway, he came out and he won. Young Tim was riding him, Tim Hyde. And he won. So he was going to Ferias. And it was time for Noel to cash out of this fella. Like, you know, we got like a half share in a horse or something that Noel wanted. So he wanted to cash out. So anyway, we're going to the race. But that morning, or the morning of the race, John Magna rang me, and he said to me, Mako was very bullish, or it might have been the day before, he's very bullish about this horse. Mako was after selling his lad to Ben Dunn, and he's very bullish about this horse. He was after buying him off the Aga Khan. And I said, God, he must be very good, John, if he thinks he's better than our lad. He says, why do you think he's that good? Oh, I said, I think he'll be very hard to beat. Oh, he said, I'll ring him back and declare war. So anyway, that was it. We go to the race anyway, and we're going to the race. And I said to Gillian on the way to the race, I tell you what now, I said, we won't lie down on this fella at all. I said, if he gets beat, he gets beat. But as far as we're concerned, it's the best horse we ever had, or best horse that ever was on four legs. So I went into the tea bar before the first race, and your dad was there. And he said to me, I didn't think you'd take us on in the last. And I said, I didn't really think he was after winning. They were after winning the 4-year-old bumper in Leopardstown, which is obviously would always be the better one, you know. And I said, actually, I didn't think you'd take us on. Why, says he, is he that good? Oh, I said, he's very good. He says, how good is he? And I said, oh, so he's as good as it. I've only seen one better than him anyway, says I, swim like that, you see. And he said, what was that? Can't think of his name. He says, can't think of his name. So anyway, I turned and I was walking out the door anyway. And as I was walking out the door, I looked around, Bobby, Talbot, Arkell. So anyway, and there's a photograph of it somewhere in the house. I said to the young Tim, before the race, I said, now, we're standing in the parade ring. And he was talking about this. And I said, now, forget about that other horse. I said, when you get to the third last fence, because my lad stayed really well, I said, you go for home as hard as you can. Now, don't look behind you until you pass the post. Go as hard as you can. God, he beat him a distance. So anyway, he ran in yellow colours the next day.
The old Sue Magna colours.
The old Sue Magna colours. And actually, when they came back, we beat Montelado in Punchestown by doing the same thing as we'd done with Marcelli in Ferias. It's the same thing. When you get to the third last fence, go for home as hard as you can. And Montelado couldn't get to him. And he beat him 2 lengths in Punchestown and that. And actually, Sue was standing beside me. I never heard anyone shouting as much in my life. She did. So, good days.
Martin Pipe, 22 winners at the festival so far. Tony McCoy, 9, but looking behind, because there come the big Irish Raiders with the white cap, Joe Mack, who's in third place too. Cardinal Hill, who's gone? Cardinal Hill's out of the race.
Cardinal Hill was another proper horse, wasn't he?
Well, I always think he was the best horse I ever had.
Why?
One day, he worked in Leopardstown, and Ted was standing beside me watching the piece of work. And it was the Monday week before Cheltenham, and he went round with 6 or 7, and they went about a mile and a half from there, and Paul was on him, and he beat, and he never came off the bridle doing it, and he beat them half a furlong. And the horse that finished, like there was Nomadic was in it. He was beaten 4 lengths in the champion hurdle. He was a half a furlong behind him. Mm-hmm. Now, Paul came off him at the second last in the Supreme, the race that Hurdle of War won. Mm-hmm. Look, Was he beaten? People will tell you he was. I didn't think he was, but people will tell you he was. But anyway, he came back and he won the two races in Ireland. He won the one and wasn't that impressive in either of them, but he still won them. He won in Ferryhouse and then he won in Punchdown. And he went home for the summer and he got a colic and he died, which is a pity. But if he wasn't as good a jumper, well, he was a beautiful looking horse. He was a gorgeous looking horse. But he would. We had what you call him at the time, Sunshine Street, who was fourth in the Epsom Derby, and he was beaten three lengths. This fellow would have put Sunshine Street up on his back and carried him. Mm. Like he was that much, mm. that good, you know. So if he like if JP didn't own him, he would have been running on the flat, mm. you know. He was that good. But look, who knows? I suppose the ones that are dead always you always think that. But it was a sad loss now to lose him. He was something else.
Sausalito Bay still in front from Fardanti Flyer. You'll Never Walk Alone trying to get on terms with his fellow Irishman. Best Mate coming home well under the stands rail. But Sausalito Bay is holding on grimly. And Sausalito Bay holds on to win. Best Mate was second then. You'll Never Walk.
What is it like for you now?
That's just unbelievable. Like, I mean, it's as I said, I can die a happy man now.
Sausalito Bay finally broke the duck.
Yeah, he did, and rightly broke the duck is right. Paul was, of course, done as usual. He was after getting a fallout hunting.
I was in the weigh room that day. He wasn't in good shape before racing.
In Cheltenham?
Yeah.
Yeah, he had a hematoma on his back, right? And he won, and he looked like he was lucky. When you think back on it, he was very lucky because he looked like a 5 or 7 pound, 10 pound claimer coming up the hill on him. He was just because I remember John Frankham saying, "Oh, look at the flat style of this one." And the flat style, he was 5 to 1. But he came in anyway, and he said, "Someone hit me in the back." I said, "What?" "Someone hit me in the back." I was trying to give him a big hug. I did give him a big hug anyway. But hadn't the hematoma had burst coming up the hill? They didn't ride anymore. He didn't ride anymore that day. But yeah, he was. He was great. And again, we lost him. We didn't lose him, but his first run back the following season in the Hatton's Grace, he fell at the third last with Norman on him, and Norman Williamson. And he fractured his pelvis. Sure, he never was as good a horse again after that.
What was your emotion in that winner's enclosure after winning a Sausalito Bay? You've had so many hard luck stories. You're reading all this. Oh, Noel Mead can't train a winner at Cheltenham. You've finally done it. 2000, Sausalito Bay, Supreme Novices Hurdle. What was going through your mind?
Well, to be honest, it was more relief.
Yeah.
It really was more relief. It was a very funny story to that afterwards. You probably heard this. I probably told you this before. I don't know. But sure, look, it was the same. He was belonging to the High Street Racing Syndicate. There was a gang of builders, more or less, and Brian Wallace, who was his sister, who used to look after them, and they were, you know, they were good players at the time, and still are. So there was plenty of celebrations and whatever. But it was more relief than anything else. It was great to win and whatever. But the following morning, we had a horse called. We had a few more runners for the rest of the week, so that was the Tuesday, and sure, we had a late night, obviously.
That wouldn't be like it.
Yeah, sure, we had a late night. So, anyway, we were staying in Sudley Castle, in a house in Sudley Castle at the time, which is in, what do you call that village, just outside that lovely little village.
Stornoway?
No, just over the hill from Cheltenham, the back of Cleve Hill.
Winchcombe.
Winchcombe. Sudley Castle's in Winchcombe and they have cottages in there and we were staying there. So anyway, I just come back down from the racetrack, having seen the horses out in the morning time. And RTE had rang me earlier and they said, would I go on the Marion Finucane show? And of course, Esther Brack was after, Esther Brack was after winning as well. So Aidan was coming on as well. And anyway, I said, yeah, no problem. Well, we'll
get on to you. It was 9 o'clock. We'll be back on to you. We're back at 9 o'clock. So I arrived back to the cottage, and it was parked outside. And I said, you know, I'll take the call in the car, because in the house there was a few other people staying in the house, and she, you know, it was handier, those little cottages. There's not much privacy in them. So anyway, I said, I'd sit in the car. So I had the papers down. It was a lovely, warm, sunny day. Sunny morning, the sun was beaming in on top of me, and I had the racing post out, and I was reading about myself and reading about whatever happened, you see, the whole that and whatever. And they rang and they said, right, we'll be back on to you now in 5 minutes, and we're putting you straight through into Marion. Is that okay? And I said, yeah, that's grand. So anyway, that was grand. Reading away, and they rang and I took the call, and Marion, that's Noel. And I said, yeah. So we're chatting away, this, that, and the other. She says, hold on there, Noel. Now, she said, I'm going to get Aidan. Aidan is on the other line here, so I want to get Aidan, you see. So she goes on to get Aidan, and anyway, the well, Noel phone. I was fast asleep. And the next thing I woke, I could hear this roaring down the phone. I mean, Noel. And I got up. Yes, I got up. Anyway, so a year or two later, I met her in Leopardstown, and she came to me and said, did you fall asleep on me on the phone? I said, I didn't. But it was very funny. It was the sun, really.
And Sausalito Bay, he was a trend of the horse you're buying off the flat. Alvin Balling's 60 odd grand or whatever, but you bought him yourself, but that was the horse you were into at that time.
Yeah. Well, Mags now, in fairness, Mags O'Toole was a big help when we were buying them, huge help when I was buying those horses off the flat. And she spent, Mags spent a lot of time sort of scorching through the catalogues and this, that and the other. And she was, when we were buying those horses off the flat, Mags was a huge help. And of course then she knew all the English trainers, and she knew the people to buy off, and she knew, so she, Mags would have been the one that would have sort of picked out the horse, and then we go and look at them and whatever. But she had a big say in it too now, so she had.
Beat a good horse that day as well.
Yeah, he beat Best Mate, which was amazing. He came wide up the straight. And funny, the Nicanor came along and he beat Denman. So he was funny. The year Sausalito Bay won, I think we got beaten ahead in the Carl Cup.
Native Dara is the horse to catch, clearing the final flight, and a bold lead there. Lands 5 lengths clear. Rosmoff heads the chasing pack. Then Vanilla Man behind horses, Brandon Court, and coming home very strongly. On the outside is What's Up Boys, flying home. Native Dara dying. What's Up Boys is flashing home on the inside. Dig it up, What's Up Boys, from Native Dara.
When Paul couldn't ride, Barry rode Native Dara, and I think now Barry might even agree now that he went too soon.
What's Up Boys?
Hardly likely he would either now, having thinking about it. But anyway, What's Up Boys?
What's Up Boys?
Yeah, Paul Flynn.
Flinners, yeah.
Got up and beat him. But look, we've gone 5-6 clear or whatever. But if the other lad had ridden him, he might have won. But I suppose that I better not say that. I have said it, haven't I?
Well, you have said it. It's too late now.
Do you think you're back to square one with your Cheltenham hoodoo then?
We're back again. I think that was obviously the year then that Frozen Groom ran the Arkle. He fell in the Arkle as well. That we had three that first day. Barry fell at the second last coming down, or the one coming down the hill on him. He was quite a good horse as well, but it's funny, he was typical, one of those flat horses. His first two runs over fences, he won the Irish Arkle. He was absolutely brilliant. And I hate, Peter will tell you, the cameraman, Peter will tell you, I don't like that horses going on camera when they're going to run, because I think it puts a block in them or getting their photographs taken or anything like that, you know. But Paul had asked me, Charlie Brooks was writing an article for some paper, wherever paper he was working for. Would I let him come in on? He was working on Paul, and could he come in one morning? So it was the last school that Frozen Groom was doing before he went to Cheltenham, and I said, "Yeah, sure, what harm can it do?" And I never forget saying it to Charlie. I says, I've never seen, this horse has never made a mistake. I said, he's been unbelievable. And I said, and his jumping, he's just incredible. But I said, he's, you know, he's on the button. So the man went down to the, to turn him into the first, it was five in a row, and you turn him into the first anyway. He half props that, just about got over, up the next, turned a complete cartwheel just where we were standing. I said, like, I thought, after that, no one ever got to stand beside me when we were jumping the fence again. But anyway, he went and fell in the plate. But he was, as I said, he was typical of those flat horses. They start off can be really good, and they can, and then, and it's worse to get instead of better. I don't know how they've ever noticed that with some of them, those horses off the flat. They can go out the first time over fences and they can be brilliant, and then maybe twice, three, the next thing is to make a mistake, the whole thing changes.
It's Ireland in front. Go Native. Medamir is staying on, chasing the leader and closing with every stride. Go Native is tying up. He's only a length to Medamir. Medamir trying desperately hard. Go Native is clinging on. Go Native wins the Supreme from Medamir.
Go Native, he was another very good horse. He didn't really fulfil his potential. He got injured in the... an ill-fated injury, didn't he, on the
race course? He got a leg in the champion early. He made it. Very bad mistake at the last first time round. Whether that's where it went wrong or not, I don't know. But he never travelled after that, and he was running for £1 million that day.
Yeah,
there was £1 million bonus, and he was. I should look at it. He was a very good horse. He still won a lot of races. He came back. He did come back, Kevin. He came home with a leg. The treatment didn't go very well, and he had 2 years off, and he went back down, Martin Cullinan down in Galway. That's where he came from, because he's belonging to people that own the Parkhouse Hotel in Galway. And Martin took him back, and the famous John Warwick came and treated him. Martin sent him up to John Warwick and treated him, and he came right. And he came back into training. And a funny story, Martin rang me and he said, this lad is all right. And I said, oh, he's not going to be right, Martin. That's because the vets had more or less given up on him. And he said, I'm telling you now, he's right. And I said, he's not. So his first canter he'll do, he'll be wrong. Well, he says, he's done his first canter. I says, when did he do that? He got out with the walker yesterday. He says, and he'd done three or four rounds at the gallop flat out. And he says, and I says, how is he? He says, he's all right. I'll be down for him this afternoon. So anyway... He came back, and I was adamant that I was going to have him fit the first day he ran, and he ran the Morgiana, and he went to the last at Hurricane Fly, and he stood back, just caught the top for his two front ones and done a complete cartwheel. But he got up and he was fine. Like, Hurricane probably would have beaten him, but he was going to run a hell of a race after being off for two and a half years or whatever. But he came home, seemed fine. We didn't do much with him because he had the fall. Just trot him around for a week, and just took our times with him back. But he was perfect, and we started hacking him again. And I was talking to Martin on the phone, and he was coming up the gallop, just coming up to me. He was about 100 yards away from me, and we were talking about whether we go back to the Christmas Hurdle in Kempton or not. Would we go to the Christmas Hurdle? And the next thing, bang, and a stifle snapped, and. Sure, I presumed after that he must have cracked it when he fell that day, the 10 days previous or whatever it was.
A hairline fracture there or something.
Yeah, there was a hairline there or whatever. Maybe it's not. Maybe it just happened. But it was quite incredible. I was talking to him on the phone, and the next thing is this happened. It was unbelievable. It was a sad loss. Now the same, but that does happen.
Here comes the final fight. Hardy Eustace rises just ahead, but Archibald is cruising up on the bridle. Brave Inker is wider out. Then a Cordon de Trois up the hill. Three in a line here. Archibald hasn't been asked a question yet in the centre. Under a nice cool Calvary. Hardy Eustace still galloping. Hardy Eustace pulling it out from Archibald. Hardy Eustace defends his title from Archibald, who's flattened out in second. Then in third is Brave Inker.
Cheltenham, Archibald.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Look, Archibald was want a good ground for starters, right? He had a wind problem. When we got him from France, another good story. Your dad was knocked down to your dad, right? Yeah. I was in France and I was going home. I had a flight home, and I wanted someone to buy him for me. And I said to Bobby, I said, Bobby, will you bid for a horse for me? And he said, what horse is that horse? He's lame, Noel. And I said, I know, but I don't think it's too much. So I want to buy him. But he's lame now, and you can't buy a lame horse. I said, but I think he's all right. So anyways, man, every time he won anyway, Bobby's name was underbought by Bobby Ryan. And the only thing Bobby told me to do was that he was lame. And I shouldn't buy him. But anyway, he came back and he ran. And every time he ran, he choked. Mm. And I sent him down to Ned Gorney and I said, Ned, I want you to hob them. And Ned said, there's nothing wrong with him, Noel. His scope is all right. There's nothing wrong with him. And he sent him back, and we ran again. He choked again. I sent him back down. I said, Ned, I want you to do him whether or which. I want you to hob him. So the hob did, turned him inside out. He just turned inside out. But there always was, I always felt anyway, that's why his head used to come up, was because he wasn't getting enough air.
Makes sense.
Now, he wasn't as good on soft ground, there's no question of that. But Paul maintained that he was just that 2 miles on just was as far as he ever would get, you know. He felt that champion hurdle, that he jumped the second last too well. He felt that if he hadn't jumped the second last as well, and then the gap opened. If he hadn't jumped the second last as well, he would have sat around the corner, and if he hadn't, and he'd have been able to come at them. Look, what happened. As I say, do I think it'd have done any different? He said he wouldn't, and he went to Punchestown, where he said in his book that there was the only row we ever had. I'm not sure it's the only row we ever had, but I remember. I saying to him, "Look," I said, "take it up and you know have a go." And he did go on, and Colum's horse came back and beat him in Punchestown, and he was really annoyed with me coming back in. He says, "Never tell me what to do again." A few more explanatives as well with that, but anyway, he got beat. But he was still probably my favourite horse. Mm. And, you know, everyone thought he was very fast. He wasn't really that fast, but he jumped so well.
Yeah.
He was never wrong with a hurdle, and your man had so much belief in him. Like, he could stand 3 lengths away from a hurdle. There's a photograph of him jumping the last in the Christmas hurdle in Kempton against Rooster Booster, and he must be 25 feet away from the hurdle. Yeah. He
was 30 lengths behind him turning that day.
Yeah.
20 lengths anyway. Oh, yeah,
that's... I was watching... Would you believe I won the Christmas hurdle... 4 times. Yeah, 4 times or 5. I've never been in Kempton.
Really?
That's right.
Sure, Falls, yeah.
Yeah, I've won the race in Newcastle 4 times, and I've never been in Newcastle.
The Fighting Fifth,
I've never been in Newcastle. But Paul always reckoned he was better on the flatter track.
Yeah.
Mm. And I'd say that's pretty right. Like, he was very good in Newcastle, and he was very good in Kempton. Although the day he got beat in Kempton by Straw Bear one day, and Paul said the ground beat him, he said he was never going to win that day, even though. And the following day, I was in Leopardstown, and just to tell you how much Paul loved that horse, there's something that stands out in my mind about it. Straw Bear beat him ahead, AP, and Paul never hit him. And I said, the following day, I said to him, why didn't you give him one or two anyway? And the tears actually came into his eyes, and he said, sure, he was doing his best. You know, he absolutely adored the horse. You know, he really adored the horse. He was so fond of him. But he was like that as a jockey anyway. He loved his horses.
Going back to Archibald, the champion hurdle, obviously Paul came in for a lot of criticism. Were you critical of the ride that day?
Not on the day, no. And look, I always felt after it, when I looked at it again, if it went different, he could have maybe won it. But look, what can you do? Pull your hair out, what do you do? I get over
the jockeys make mistakes, and I don't know whether he made a mistake or not. He knows more about riding horses. I wasn't much good at riding horses, so why should I say he should have done? That's what he thought was right. I know a lot of people thought he should have done something else and whatever, but he thought it was the right thing to do,
Looking like he's travelling so well, we're going to win. There's a great clip of you and Desi Hughes looking at the race together. Desi says, well done to you.
That's right. Desi and myself, Desi were standing together, and obviously Harry Eustace ended up winning it. And Desi gave me a slap on the back. He says, well done. And then the next thing I had to turn around and give him a slap on the back and say, well done. And like, it was.
For great
and there's no doubt, like, I mean, people say to you, how did you get over it? Well, it was just like someone pulling the bottom out of you. Like, you know, it was an terrible, unbelievable, it was hard to get over it. It really was, because it did pull the stomach out of you. There's no question about it. To think that there's nothing as bad as to think you have it won, mm-hmm. and then the next thing is to get it taken away like that. And it really was.
The second's a lonely spot, isn't it?
Oh man. It was. Yeah, no, he was, that was it. But sure, look at him. That's...